This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
It's draft week. As crazy as that sounds, as quick as that has come on us, it is, we're a couple days out now from the 2018 NFL draft. And, God, it's been a fast offseason, hasn't it? I mean, from Gruden to the offseason program and all the new guys on this team. I mean, it has been a whirlwind past couple months. So I guess it kind of seems appropriate that the 2018 draft is now just a couple days ahead of us. So we were here, we were talking, we were thinking about the draft, obviously. The Raiders pick number 10, all you guys know that. But we were thinking about the draft and kind of what goes into the draft, the evaluation. And we got in this conversation of how much the draft has changed probably over the past, I don't know, call it 10, 15 years, right? It's must-see TV now. It's a prime-time, three-day event on NFL Network, on ESPN. I mean, no matter where you look, it's the draft. And so we thought, who better to talk to about the draft and how it's all changed than one of our favorite guys in the building, John Naughton, a.k.a. Johnny O. And Johnny O has literally served in nearly every job imaginable on the football side here for the Silver and Black. He's taped ankles. He's helped coach the defensive line. He's scouted. I mean, he's literally, you name it and he's done it. There isn't an employee here that's been here longer than Johnny O. And we figured, you know what? He is the perfect guy to talk to about how the draft has changed in a lot of aspects, obviously from the TV event aspect, but then also how, you know, player evaluation, how, guys getting their scouting reports, how GMs looking at intangibles from these guys, how all that's changed too. So without further ado, here's our conversation with none other than John Naughton, a.k.a. the legend Johnny O. All right, so today in the Beat Laboratory, a very special guest, friend of the program, John Naughton, more famously known as Johnny O. Johnny O, right next to us in the studio, who's our scouting IT, video coordinator, knower of all things Raiders. So first of all, Johnny O, thanks for coming and hanging out with us today. I know the pre-draft time is a crazy time and all that stuff, but start at the beginning, right? I feel that's the most logical place to start. This is year what with the organization?
41.
41. So how did you start, take me there, how did you end up becoming a member of the Silver and Black?
Well, I go back to when I was a ball boy, which really is almost 50 years ago now, but Richard Romanski, our equipment manager, used to bring kids from around the block to go to Raider practice or whatever, and so it was my turn to go, and I went one Saturday, and the very next Saturday, I told my mom he wanted me back again, and she dropped me off at the Coliseum, and I never came home, so I just stayed there.
50 years later?
50 years later, I'm still there.
I'm sure it's a pretty broad question for you, though. The best season you've had, top of your head, the most entertaining, fun?
Well, I tell you, the one that was interesting was 1980, because we had a lot of injuries in the preseason and stuff, and we had a new quarterback. We just traded Stabler. Phil Villapiano had just gone to Buffalo. I mean, there was a lot of weird things going on there, and we ended up like 11-5, and we barely made it. We were 2-3 at the beginning of the season. I thought, oh, man, this is going to suck. But we went back to Cleveland when it was like 40 or 50 below zero. We had just beaten Houston Oilers in a game the week before in the playoffs, and so that got us to go to Cleveland. And it was about 50 below zero. Mike Davis intercepts a ball in the end zone. We end up winning 14-12, and now we got to go down and play the Chargers. And I've told people this 100 times. I have never, as bad as we've been, over the years, or as good as we've ever been, I've never, ever thought a night before the game we're going to lose. I don't care. I'm always optimistic. And even the morning of the game, I'm like, oh, we're going to beat this team, whatever. Well, we go down to the Chargers, and we're getting ready to play, and I'm sitting there, and we're having, our quarterback meeting, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going, there's no way we could win this game. This team is just too good. And, I'm looking up and down the lineup. I mean, they're good. They got Gary Big Hands Johnson on defense. They got Dan Fouts at quarterback. Helen Winslow's a tight end. I mean, it's just, they're an all-star team. And the next morning, I remember waking up. I look out the window, and it's raining. And I go, oh, we got a chance. And we ended up beating them 34-27. And we held the ball at the end of that game for about 6 minutes with Mark Van Egan. We just ran the ball out. I mean, it was just the way you wanted to end the game. And of course, then we ended up winning the Super Bowl against the Eagles. But I felt like once we won that game against the Chargers, that there was no way we were going to lose the Super Bowl.
So we're in mid-draft time, right? We're a couple days out from the NFL draft. and we were talking about it, that you've been had probably like one of the best seats in the house for some of like the most pivotal, biggest, most exciting moments in Raiders draft history. So before we go down that road, though, I mean, when you think back to when you first started here and the way that the draft was now, I can't imagine it's the three-day, 24/7 spectacle that it is today, right?
Oh, no, it was a grind back in the day. In fact, I got a really good story about it. We were, and I don't remember the exact year. We probably have to look it up. But it was somewhere in either the late 70s or way early 80s, somewhere around there. And they did the draft all in one day back then. It was like 12 rounds. And we would start at like 6 a.m., and it would go till about 2 in the morning. And it was even worse for the East Coast guys because you're talking about 3, 4 in the morning, right? And we're sitting there, and it gets to about the 11th round and everything, and, you know, and Mr. Davis sitting there. And, you know, those guys did a great job, I mean, you know, getting prepared for all that stuff. And, you know, I studied a little bit more than they do now back then. And I remember Mr. Davis was looking around the room. He goes, anybody got a suggestion? It was like the 11th round. We had like 2 picks in the 11th round, and I raised my hand. He goes, what are you raising your hand for? I go, I got a suggestion. He goes, who do you got? I said, a guy named Gardner Williams. And he goes, Gardner Williams? He says, you know, he's looking him up and everything. And so, yeah, he plays right here at St. Mary's. And he was like 6'2", 195 pounds. He could run 4'5", all this stuff. And he goes, what's he, you know, why is he still on the board? I said, because he went to St. Mary's, you know. And so he thought about it. He goes, all right, we'll let you have the pick. So that was my big pick, you know. And he comes to mini camp, you know, rookie mini camp, and he runs out there and he runs. We used to time him back then. He busts a 4'5" out or whatever, and he's 6'2", 195. And he's like, Al comes over after practice. This is the steal of the draft. We got the best player, you know, and all this stuff. And so I'm thinking, oh. And I'm taping ankles back then, helping Rod Martin, you know, with all that stuff. And I used to tape him every day. And I said, listen, Gardner, I said, you know, my ass is on the line here. So you got to, you know, you got to perform out there. And he's like, no problem, I'll do it. So we get like one of our first preseason games, and he like turned down a tackle or something, and he got cut like the next day. I'm like, oh man. So he just wasn't, you know, he had all the attributes you want, but then when, you know, his toughness goes, he was pretty average.
I mean,
but it was kind of fun though. I mean,
yeah, sure. Can you imagine that today if a GM was like, all right, what do you guys think? You know, it's the end of the
well,
day.
You'd be surprised. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that go on in there that are kind of surprising.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, what was like an Al Davis draft room like? I mean, you said, you know, I mean,
I think there's a misconception about Mr. Davis in the draft room. I mean, I think it always ultimately came down to him,
sure.
Which it should.
Yeah.
You know, and it should when you're, you know, if you're a GM with a team or you know, a Bill Belichick or whatever you want to call the guy. I mean, he's got the, you know, the ultimate call, and Mr. Davis did too. But he really took everybody's thoughts before we actually did it. And I think that's where the misconception goes, is he just walked in and said, I'm taking this guy, and everybody was against him. And that rarely happened. If I don't remember it ever being like 18-1, and he's the one, and all of a sudden we take the guy. I don't think that ever happened in my lifetime.
I mean, you're talking about when you brought up the guy that you wanted to take a pick, he's flipping through the binder or whatever, but I mean, how much has that process changed? Oh. Where you're not, I mean, you guys, I can't imagine Reggie and Coach Gruden are up there flipping through a binder to find guys.
Everything's computerized now. I mean, we put the video up in the cloud. You know, all the reports are put on these, you know, on iPads and surfaces and all this other stuff. I mean, yeah, you don't even have. I mean, you can make a hard copy, and I'm sure they have some around. But you know, back in the day, I mean, we had binders upon binders of stuff. It was really hard to get to all that stuff. And if you wanted a picture of a guy, you had to ask a guy to send you one or something. I mean, you know, nowadays, you know, you go to the combine and they're taking your picture, doing everything. And I mean, you know what these guys look like. I mean, it's night and day the way the draft is now.
I mean, as far as like the actual scouting of the players, though, has that remained pretty consistent, do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because they still go out. I mean, you're still going to watch the film or video now. You know, you're going to, you know, ultimately it's whether the guy can play. Now, one thing that hasn't really changed at all is, you know, the All-Star games and the pro days and all that. Now, there's way more pro days now than there was in the past. They still did have some. But the emphasis on the All-Star games and the pro days and all that, that's still kind of, you know, people really want to see that stuff. You know, regardless of whether the guy played, you know, 12 or 13 games or whatever, they're always saying, oh, let me see his pro day. You know, let's watch him against some better competition. Let's, you know, so that stuff, even I know Mr. Davis loved the Senior Bowl. I mean, you know, on the blue-gray game back in the day and all that stuff. So we really studied that kind of stuff. You know, that's been consistent all the way through.
How much do you think, like, a guy, you know, let's say a guy goes off in the Senior Bowl, right, running back runs for 140 and three touchdowns, how much do you think that can change the perception of him one way or the other, right, compared to maybe he didn't have the...
I think that'll change some, but I'll tell you what really changes is if you get a guy at the combine that runs like a 4.25 or something, you know, it's a wide receiver that didn't catch a lot of balls in college, all of a sudden he's going to move up because he can run. And then you're going to go back and you're going to try to find stuff that makes him look good, you know, and say, oh, my gosh, you know, the guy caught 12 passes, but, boy, they're great 12 passes or something. But so I think the combine actually, and depending on, like, what you talk about with the Senior Bowl, though, if you were to, like, a little bit of a smaller school, like, say you went to Cal Poly or something, and all of a sudden you get to go be in the Senior Bowl and you have a nice Senior Bowl, that's going to move you up. Yeah. And you're right about that. But if a guy's a great player at Auburn, you know, at Auburn University, and he goes in there and has a great Senior Bowl, I don't think it changes the guys that much.
Interesting. So we were saying, right, you've sat in on some of the, you know, the formative decisions, I guess, on a personnel side that have shaped this organization for the last 30, 40 years, right? What do you remember about Marcus Allen and him eventually getting drafted? What do you just remember about him when he came out as
well, I'll tell you. I got to tell you, that was our first time that we went to a combine. And it was five or six teams. I think it was us, Buffalo, Dallas. And it wasn't Dallas, by the way. It was 49ers, us, Dallas, Seahawks. Anyway, so we go down there. And this is pretty funny. And Marcus is at the combine. This is 1982. And Marcus is at the combine. And, you know, he runs his 40 and he kind of leaves. And, of course, everybody's pissed off thinking we told him not to do that, right? Or told him to do that. And we honestly didn't tell him anything. Because it was such a small combine, we didn't have the 350 or how many guys they bring now. I think we had 100 and something. And so everybody had kind of a little job to do, right? So my big job was I had to stand by the 40 and the guys that were timed them, I had to record them. And I remember this is the first time I met Gil Brandt. And I'm still good friends with Gil Brandt, by the way. So Gil comes over to me, and he says, all right, he says, here's your job. You know, we were going to do this. You know, you're going to write these things down. You're going to give them to me at the end of the day, and then we're going to, you know, run them off for all the guys and hand them out the next day. And I said, okay. And he says, but I don't want you to show anybody the times. And I said, okay. So they run their first group of 40s. You know, it's about, I don't know, 20 guys or whatever. So I immediately walk over to Al and hand it to him. And Gil sees me, you know, and he walks, he goes, what are you doing? So I told you, you can't. He says, it's my boss. I'm not going to not let him look at it. He goes, don't do it anymore. I said, all right. So next group goes, walk over. Here you go, Al. You know, take a look. And he's like, okay, thanks. You know, and Gil's like, do I got to replace you the first day? And I said, come on, man. I said, this is my boss. And the ironic thing about that is, you know, as the thing progressed and we ended up in Indianapolis, Al and Gil would sit together at the 40-yard line, and then now he was getting our times, you know, because my brother and I would time the 20s and 40s and stuff, and we'd bring him down and show Mr. Davis, and he'd go, did you make a copy for Gil? We go, yeah. And so, you know, it kind of went all the way around, so that was kind of fun.
That seems weird that only a handful of teams would go to a combine, though. I feel like if you're the teams that aren't in that small group, you're missing out.
Well,
on
we didn't belong to the. There was like Blesto and National, so they did have a combine with more people. So we were the teams that I was just mentioning. None of us belonged to the actual combine, so we decided to put our own together, and that's why it was such a small one. So there was one that was. I think they had one in Tampa back then. That was kind of the big one. And they probably had 20-something teams or whatever. And at that time, there was probably only 28 teams in the league. I can't remember. But, you know, we all got together, kind of banded together. And we still didn't share our information. I mean, that's one thing we didn't do. Yeah. We never shared our information with anybody.
So we just celebrated the 20th anniversary of drafting Seawood. So did you think, I mean, granted, like I said, hindsight's 2020, that when you picked this kid, that he was going to, you know, have the Hall of Fame, all pro, all everything career that he eventually had?
Yeah, actually I did, and I'll tell you why, because watching him in college, the guy was dynamic. I mean, the only thing that I thought would hold him back was some kind of devastating injury, you know, but when he came in and you watched him just in practice and stuff like that, I mean, you just knew right away the guy was going to be a great player. And he had the right attitude, he had the right demeanor. I mean, he just, He had it all. And, yeah, no, I did think he was going to be I don't know, he played 20 years or whatever he did, or 19 yeah. years or all, what all that is. But, I mean, you do pretty quick. And you know what? You kind of know that pretty quick with a lot of guys. I mean, you know, when Howie came in, you know, he was kind of a, you know, Villanova, second round, you know, whatever guy. And but you watch him at practice, you know, after a couple of weeks of practice, you go, wow, this guy's got something. So, you know, the guys that can play, you figure out pretty quick when they get in here that they can play.
Is anyone surprised? I mean, I'm sure there's been a ton over the years, but one guy that really surprised you that you kind of came in maybe with like a low, you know, you thought maybe a low ceiling, and then you look.
Well,
and
there was a guy, Reggie Kinlaw, that was a nose tackle out of Oklahoma, and he was, you know, he was supposed to be a higher pick, but he had a bad knee and all this stuff, and he was under, that guy weighed 230 pounds or 225, 230 pounds, that, and everybody said, oh, he's too small, he can't do that, but he had so much quickness, and, you know, he was tough, and his upper body was strong, and he had these really big legs and all this stuff, but, you know, just because of the knee and he's undersized, nobody thought he'd be anything, and that guy ended up playing. I mean, he won two Super Bowls with us. He ended up playing 8-10 years with us, played up in Seattle for a couple of years. And so that was actually surprising. I thought that he could play maybe a little bit, but I didn't think he'd have a career like he had.
Right. I mean, there's, you know, I think whenever you talk about the draft, and especially when the Raiders on the clock, it seems like every year, whether it's we're picking one, we're picking 32, it doesn't matter. They always flash the graphic of, you know, the last team or whatever before the Bucks that picked a kicker in the first round. So, I mean, Bass obviously had such a great career here, you know, arguably a Hall of Fame career. Now taking the final chapter up in Seattle. But, I mean, what was it like? What was, I guess, your reaction when you found out we were going to take Bass in the first round?
Well, what's funny is I kind of have to give my brother a little bit of credit on this one, because we always used to get over to the Combine early because we'd set up all the stuff for the coaches and Mr. Davis. So when they came in, everything was done. And so by the time Mr. Davis got there, he'd come in maybe on Friday, but that's when the kickers would kick, but he wouldn't go over there, you know. But my brother and I decided to go over. We wanted to see this guy, Sebastian Janikowski. It was like, you know, this guy's like booming him and kicking him. He's a physically big guy.
Yeah.
And we're watching him and watching him, and I'm like, holy mackerel. My brother goes, man, this guy's going in the first round. I said, there ain't going to be no kicker in the first round. You're friggin' nuts. Anyway, so the next day, I think it was in the morning, we'd always walk over with Mr. Davis, and he'd say, hey, what's going on? What do you hear? You know, and this and that. And so my brother's like, you know, this guy, Sebastian Janikowski, is a really good kicker. So what are you talking about? He says, kicker. He's a Florida State kid. He goes, I know who he is, but, you know. He says, I'm telling you, this guy's going in the first round. And he's like, you're nuts. You're high. You know, all this stuff. This ain't going to happen. So, you know, that's like as we're walking over to the combine. So fast forward to draft day. You know, I think, you know, there was a wide receiver, Sylvester Morris, I think, was a guy. But there was a couple other people. There was, you know, and it's first round. I think he's, what, 17th pick or whatever. And as we're getting closer, I'm thinking to myself, you know, and they had watched a bunch of film, and everybody kind of liked him. But, you know, I thought, oh, he'll be there in the second round, third round, or whatever. And then I started thinking, well, wait a minute. You know, we don't have a very good kicker right now. You know, we ought to do this thing. And I didn't suggest it to Al by any means.
Yeah.
But I knew it was in his mind from what, you know, had happened earlier. And they, like I said, they studied a bunch of film on and everything and did some background stuff on him and all this stuff. And, I mean, he was getting first-round grades from everybody. And all of a sudden, there we went and took him. And now, did I think that was going to last as long? No, that one I didn't think would last as long as it did.
Oh, that's almost 2 decades.
Yeah.
Almost 20 years.
I know.
Years.
That's yeah, I thought he'd be a good kicker. And I thought, you know, he'd be, you know, a really good kicker for us.
Yeah.
But not 18 years worth or whatever it's been. I mean, that's phenomenal. I was here when we took Ray Guy in the first round. But now he was a phenomenal athlete in college. I mean, the guy was just, he was a really, really good athlete. So you could kind of see that coming. And plus the guy just boomed these punts. And we were pretty good at the time. So we could take a chance on taking a guy that early. But right after we did that, a year or two after that, the New Orleans Saints took a guy named Russell Erksleben. And I want to say it was out of Texas A&M or one of those schools. And this guy bombed big time in the first round. So I think that kind of shied people away all the way until we took Seabass. And that had to be like, God, 75, 74, 75 when he was taken. And I don't think anybody even came close to taking a guy as early as we did till we took Seabass again. And I think it was just because of that Erksleben thing was so bad. I mean, he was bad.
Really?
Yeah, it was, oh, bad. Poor guy.
How does that happen, though, if a guy who's obviously gotten graded out really well and obviously probably had a pretty dynamic college career, that ends up just doing nothing.
Well, that's one, but that's one position that, man, it gets in your head, and you're pretty well screwed. I mean, if you can't mentally come back from missing a kick, or you know, it's like swinging a golf club, you get the yips, whatever. I think I think that's as close of a comparison as you can have to, you know, swinging your leg and trying to hit a ball. So
we were talking about guys that you've seen come through these doors that have just impressed you right from Jump Street. So physically, it doesn't have to be a good football player, but a guy who you saw and you're like, wow, this is a physical specimen.
There was a guy from LSU we took in the fifth round. We had 3 fifth round picks. So I want to say it was 83, and it was a guy named John Adams. And I mean, you know, he comes out in his shorts. We're doing the physical out of everything. You're like, holy mackerel, this guy. I mean, he's pumped up. He could run. He wasn't afraid of hitting. You know, he had it all. But, you know, he ended up playing maybe 2 years for us and not really having a good career. But the guy physically probably had the best overall body that I've ever seen on a football player.
It seems like a couple of years ago there was that, I don't know if it was like a phase or a trend or whatever, but it seemed like NFL teams were wary of guys who were in like those kind of just those college, those college systems. Is it still like that, do you think?
Oh, I think so. And I think the other thing that gets you is if you're in college and they're putting those boards up and everybody's looking at it and they never really call a play, when those guys come into the league, and even I'm not just talking about the quarterback, but all the rest of the players too, if they've never heard a play call before, I mean, it takes a while for those guys to get that.
It's funny you say that, because Jadon Mickens was here, he was telling me, because I went to Oregon and he went to UW, and I was giving him a hard time for going to UW, and I was like, you know, ultimately what made you choose UW over Oregon? And he told me that UW had a way better track record of guys getting in the league just because of that. He said, because at Oregon, it's the guy standing on the sideline with the board, and he goes, when the guys from Oregon get to the league, a lot of them can't digest a play. And he was like, that's why I went to Washington. I knew I wanted to play in the NFL. And he's like, the shiny jerseys didn't get me. He goes, I knew what I wanted. And he said UW was the place that got me there. And he said, in talking to his buddies that have gone to like those like air raid type of places, he goes, they have a really hard time that first year even knowing how to get through a playbook.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, the thing about it, too, is, I mean, and Gruden, you know, I was here with Gruden before, obviously, you know, being here as long as I have. And, you know, his offense can get wordy. You know, and then, you know, then as the thing goes on, you know, he'll come up with one word for the whole thing or whatever. But, you know, if you can't do that, if you can't digest, you know, at least the part of play you're supposed to know, and if you're a quarterback, you need to know the whole thing. One thing about John that's always impressed me and frustrates me, too, in the same light, is he doesn't get out of coach mode. I mean, you can walk down the hallway and say, hey, coach, nice day. And he goes, you know, he wants to bring up some, what do you do on this play or what do you do on that play? And he's even asking a guy like me, you know, what do you do on this play? And I'm like, you know, whatever. But he really rarely gets out of coach mode. And that's a good and a bad thing, because I think at some point you got to relax a little bit. And, you know, he's all in, man.
We got to ask, your big, well, not your big, but your first claim to fame, right, is that you anticipated or predicted that screen pass, right? The Squirek ended up picking it
well,
up and...
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I got to explain this thing, because it's not that it's blown out of proportion. I did do it. But just let me say, the only reason it happened was it was right around the two-minute warning. I knew that our coaches upstairs were coming down to get ready for halftime, right? So I'm on the headphones. And at that time, I was charting plays with Charlie Sumner, and I would write down stuff. And one thing that Charlie was really good at is he'd listen to everybody. And you know, by no means was I a coach. By no means was I making calls on anything, and I wasn't trying to outdo anybody. But I don't, like I said, nobody was up there, and they had just the 2-minute warning had just happened, and all of a sudden I see Joe Washington come into the game, and I just said, "Hey, Charlie," I said, "you know, last time they were in this situation, they threw a screen pass." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "When we played them last time, they ran a screen pass, and they got like 75 yards on us." He goes, really? And I go, yeah. He says, do you think they're going to do it? And I go, yeah, I really do. He goes, all right. So he goes over. It's the funniest thing. So he goes over to Jack Squirek, and he says, and Jack was a really good guy. You talk about a great body, by the way, this guy. Whew, he was put together. Anyway, he says to Jack, he goes, Jack, go in the game. I don't care what you call. He says, but I want you to take Joe Washington and follow him wherever he goes. He says, you know, call cover 3. I don't care, but this is your responsibility. You take that guy. If he goes in motion, if he does this, he says, we really think they're going to throw a screen pass to him. We want you to stop it before it gets going. He's like, okay, coach. And he goes out there, and, of course, he has to go in for Matt Millen. Matt comes over, and Matt is so mad. He's like, what are you doing, Charlie? Why are you taking out? And I'm trying to calm down. I say, Bubba, that's what we used to call him. I said, relax, dude. It's going to be all right. It's one play, all right? We just want to get out of the half. There's only a few seconds left. Let's just get this thing done. So all of a sudden, he goes back, throws a screen pass, gets intercepted, we score a touchdown. So I'll never forget, Matt Millen goes over and he picks up Charlie. He's like, great call, Charlie. And Charlie actually pointed to me and said thanks and whatever. And so that's the whole thing. It wasn't, like I said, it happened. It was something I remembered. I mean, have I suggested stuff before that didn't happen? Heck yeah. So we don't talk about that stuff, but you know, something that helps you win a Super Bowl, what the hell?
Is there a job on the personnel side that you haven't done? I mean, like,
well, there's not a job. There's pretty much not much of a job that I haven't done on the football team.
Yeah,
because you know I've worked in the training room taping ankles. When I first started, I was a ball boy for crying out loud. I worked in the equipment room with Dick Romanski for a few years. I kind of worked when John Madden was coaching. I kind of was helped with the game plan and all that stuff. And then before they actually had these quality control guys, I actually did quality control for both offense and defense, you know, took film off. And that's where I learned I learned kind of a little bit of offense and defense. So, yeah. And then even on, like you said, on the personnel side, I'd go out for pro days, you know, local ones up at Cal. In fact, I remember I worked out Namdi Asamoah. Yeah. That was kind of cool. You know, that was fun. And, you know, went down to Cal Poly all the time. And my son ended up going to Cal Poly, yeah, which was kind of cool. And, you know, been to Washington, Idaho State. You know, so, yeah, I enjoy it. That's the part I enjoy the most. And this time of year, believe it or not, I know, and I don't know how, I don't ask the coaches or scouts or whatever, you know, what part of the year they like. I mean, I love the games and all that, too.
Yeah.
But I just remember I could be mistaken, but I think this was a really fun time of the year for Al Davis. You know what I mean? This was like...
That's kind of where he made his bread and butter,
yeah,
his evaluation.
He really
and
knew this stuff. I mean, he really did. And he was really organized. So, you know, I really think he enjoyed this part of it, you know, trying to outmaneuver people or out-trade a guy or, you know, go get a guy if you really wanted him and things like that. So I think this was like a really fun year, fun time of the year for him.
So obviously draft time in the middle of everything. What's your best Al Davis draft story? I mean, this.
Well, I mean, just an overall story, but I'll give you one thing that actually did happen. But one thing that Mr. Davis was, I don't know if it's superstitious, but maybe, I guess, sort of. If there was a guy that he was really kind of like, and all the scouts would know who it is, and some of the coaches or some of us, you know, we'd be on the side, and I wasn't sure who the heck it was, but. You know, he wouldn't let the guy, like Mickey Barvin, God rest his soul, he had great handwriting, so that he'd always have Mickey write all the names up on the board, you know, in order and everything. And we'd have, like, say, 20 picks, and you'd have to have, like, 15 names, and one of those guys was going to get to you. There was some kind of formula and all this weird stuff. So Mickey's writing all these names down. I'm looking, I'm going, man, I know that Al likes this one particular guy, but his name's not up there. And I come to find out that he didn't want him to write it up there because he didn't want to jinx it. And 9 times out of 10, you know, he'd go, okay, we're taking so-and-so. I go, God, his name's not even on the board. And, you know, and that's how he was. But one particular time, and I don't remember the exact year it was, but Bob Sanders was coming out. And we had just taken Robert Gallery in the first round. So second round, you know, we're waiting and waiting it out and everything. And I think Denver is right before us. There's like 3 or 4 picks coming up, and we have these names up there, and I don't see Bob Sanders' name up there. So I go whisper to one of the scouts, says, don't we like Sanders? They go, yeah, don't say his name. I go, okay. So, you know, we're getting to, you know, right there, and you could see him getting excited, and everybody in the room liked him. So, you know, it wasn't like just, you know, Mr. Davis wanted him or whatever. And so right before we're getting ready to pick, Denver's on the clock, and with a minute or two left, they make a trade with Indianapolis. And as soon as they make the trade, they take Bob Sanders. And you'd have thought that the air just went right out of the room. And all of a sudden, Mr. Davis is like, you got to be kidding me. And I don't remember that ever happening before where somebody's right before us and took him. I've seen it happen 2 or 3 picks before us. Or if we have 3 names up there and you know, we're picking next. We'll move down a couple. No one will still get those guys.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing that Mr. Davis, I mean, if he had guys that he liked, if he had a guy that he wanted, he'd take them. But if he had three guys and didn't feel bad about taking any of those guys and we were picking next, he'd move down two or three picks. No one, he'd still get a good player. But when that thing happened, it was like, oh, my God. So we ended up taking Jake Grove out of West Virginia in the second round. And then, so now, but he still wanted to get a safety. And so now we're waiting it out because, you know, we got like 32 picks before we're picking again, or I don't forget what it was. And he keeps wanting to move up and take Stuart Schweigert, you know, out of Purdue. And so, you know, we're waiting and waiting. And I remember the scouts were saying, oh, he'll be there, he'll be there. He goes, yeah, you told me that before. And, of course, Stuart ended up being there and we took him. And,
yeah.
You know, everything worked out. But that's when I got, I remember was just, oh, I felt so, I really felt bad for him.
Yeah.
You know, that actually happened. And I don't ever remember that happening. And maybe I'm probably wrong. I'm sure it must have, you know, at some point. But that was one that really stood out.
Yeah, we were talking. I feel like the draft room on, like, draft day, whether it's day one, day two, day three, or whatever, has got to be the most high-pressure, just stressful kind of room at times, right?
Or... Well, yeah, yes and no. I think that one thing that when you talk about changing, the ESPNs and NFL – channel and all that other stuff, they make something that's pretty boring really exciting because, you know, they have the highlights on, they're talking about them. And Mr. Davis didn't want TVs in the room, right? So we'd be sitting in there, and even though it's not like it is now, they still had it on TV and stuff, and he'd walk out of the room and watch it in another room for a couple of picks or whatever. But we'd go back in there, we'd just be sitting there, and be one guy on a phone saying, okay, and the next pick is this. And then, you know, in the first round, you're waiting 15 minutes for the next one, 50 minutes for the next one. And, you know, and guys, you know, they'd start chatting it up a little bit. And as it got closer to our pick, you know, Mr. Davis would say, hey, get everybody in here, let's talk about it, you know, and everything. And but it is nerve-wracking a little bit, but it's really boring. And even the combine, for the most part, it's not the most exciting thing in the world either.
He's watching guys bench, and then there's another 40 guys.
And then you watch him run a 40. Then you do this, then you do that. But the way that this thing gets publicized, the way it's on TV now, it makes it look like, wow, this is unbelievable.
Well, no, but I mean, if you think about it, even the undrafted guys, this place probably more than like anyone else has such a rich history of undrafted guys producing,
too. I'm telling you, man, and that's not the easiest thing to do because in the old days, I actually signed a couple guys, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Who'd you sign?
I signed a guy, Steve Potter. He was, I want to say, a West Virginia kid, linebacker. He ended up playing in the league. He didn't play for us. He played for Miami, and he played for Kansas City Chiefs. But I actually signed one other guy. His name is Phil the Thrill Livingston. That's what I called him. He went to, like, Penn State or Maryland, or I don't know. He was back east somewhere. And I remember I called him up, and because they give you a list of guys, you know, call them up and, you know, offer them $500 or $1,000 or whatever and see if they'll sign. So I call Phil up, and I said, hey, Phil, John Otten with the Raiders. I said, we'd like to sign you. And he goes, well, he says, can I call you back? And I said, why? He goes, well, I'm from Philly, and Philly, you know, is talking to me. I want to see what they say. I said, okay. So I hang up, and so Al says to me, or Mr. Davis says to me, he says, hey, did you get Livingston? I go, oh, he's going to call me back after he talks to Phil. He goes, are you kidding me? What are you doing? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, he ain't going to call you back. He says, you're so naive, you know? And I was like, man, I felt about 2 inches big. And I said, oh, man, please call back. So he ended up calling back, and we signed him. I think we gave him $500 or something. And it was 1980. And he ended up getting a Super Bowl ring.
Oh, how about
that?
Yeah,
he was. That's pretty cool. He was like a... back then it was like practice squad, taxi, but they didn't have practice squads, I forget, he was like, I don't know, taxi squad guy or whatever.
Well, Jonio, we've had a lot of fun hanging out with you. We've learned a lot, more than we thought we were going to learn about everything. So thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll see you next to the studio.
Oh, yeah, no, it was my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
And just a huge, huge, huge thank you to our guy, Jonio. Jonio is one of our favorite guys in the building, and we're gonna bring him back. We're gonna bring him back to the lab a couple times throughout the year. I mean, he's just a wealth of knowledge. I wish we could have left literally everything that we talked to him about, but such is life. But he seriously has the best stories. He's been here for everything, from Mr. Davis to some of the most pivotal moments in Raiders history. He's seen him. He's literally been on the sidelines in the draft room. You know, there was like I said, there's probably no one who can tell the history and the kind of fun, interesting stories of this place better than Johnny O. So yeah, huge shout out to Johnny O. We'll get him back. Let us know what you think of him. He's a great guy with a lot of fun stories. But shifting back to the draft now. Like I said, we're a couple days out, and the draft, you know, we're just like everyone else. The draft has become a must-see primetime event for us too. So Thursday, draft kicks off Thursday, first round, 5 o'clock. See it on NFL Network, ESPN, all that stuff. You know where to go. But us at Silver and Black Productions, we have a lot of cool stuff cooking too. So our guy Kyle Martin, who co-hosts with me sometimes and, you know, does a little bit of everything for our department, he's actually going to be at the draft party in Oakland. And as soon as the pick comes in, he's going to be going live on Instagram. So make sure, as soon as the pick comes in, that you tune into Raiders Instagram. He's going to be there. He's going to break down the pick. He's going to get the reaction from the crowd. We're anticipating a really, really strong, positive reaction, Raider Nation. I'm looking at you. So when the pick comes in, make sure to tune into the Instagram, see him doing his thing, hit him up on the IG. He'll be there. And not only that, but we're also going to have another Facebook Live show with our guy Lincoln Kennedy, you know, Raiders legend Lincoln Kennedy, and Nicole Zaloumis too. So we're going to have a ton of stuff going on. You will not be at a loss for Raiders content on Thursday. And also, just because, like I said, this is a must-see thing, a must-see event now, later on Thursday night, we're going to have Coach John Gruden and Reggie McKenzie talking about the first-round pick. And so the timing on that is probably going to be a little TBD, but our guess, our best guess as of right now, probably closer to the end of the first round. So like I said, when we pick at 10, tune in, check out Kyle doing his thing, go back, watch a little bit of the draft. But as things are really starting to wind down, make sure you come back to Raiders.com, you go back to Raiders Social, and tune in for the press conference about, you know, talking about the first round pick. And then Friday, because we haven't done enough already, we're actually going to have the first round pick in the building at 12:20. He'll do his press conference. We'll have some really fun exclusive stuff that we'll do with him too when he gets into town. And then Saturday, day three of the draft. I mean, if you love football, if you love Raiders football, if you love the Silver and Black, you are not going to have a lack of opportunities to enjoy this content, to take it in. We want to hear from you. Let us know what you like, what you maybe didn't like a little bit, or, you know, how we can get better, or what you guys want to see over the next 3 days of the draft. It's going to be a blast, but we got a ton to do. So I'm going to get out of here. We will see you guys on Thursday, number 10 pick, call it 6:20, 6:30, somewhere around there. But yes, we will see you. We are very excited, and we will catch you next time very, very soon on the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.
Thanks for listening to the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.